Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. This has been a long week, even though it was a four-day week for most people. Jim, there's been a lot of just really difficult news and depressing news throughout the week, but we've got bad, crazy, and good for you today. We're going to end on good news because we just really need it this week. So on to the bad news. We just add to the misery first. The Labor Department report on the August jobs situation came out today. 169,000 new jobs created, slightly below expectations. The overall unemployment rate dipped to 7.3%, which the administration will probably try to spin as a good thing. But it's mainly because the labor participation rate is down to the lowest level since 1978. We also look at June and July, and you're looking at 58,000 jobs revised downwards in July, 16,000 revised downward in June. That's 74,000 total. We've seen from month after month, I don't know what exactly the situation was in August, Jim, but the vast majority of jobs created this year have been part-time jobs, so not the type of really solid jobs that a lot of people are hoping for. Unemployment rate among teenagers is a disaster. So, yes, it's good that we're creating jobs and not losing jobs, but there's just so much work to be done here.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a ton that was unbelievably shocking in this month's results. However, it does point to an economy that really isn't in recovery in a significant way, in a way that, you know, you would actually see significant numbers of people going from the unemployed to the employed. And while some of the workplace participation rate drop month by month can be attributed to the baby boomers retiring, not all of it is. And in fact, it's gone up significantly much faster than you'd expect by this. So some of this may be kind of a forced retirement when you retire early just because you can't find a better job. Long-term unemployment is very high. As you pointed out, the revisions of numbers that look pretty good in past months go down. We have a country that just isn't working. And as you know, frequently noted, many of the jobs that have been created in the last couple of months are basically part-time jobs because Obamacare has now created this enormous incentive for employers to shift workers from full-time to part-time. And it's, you know, harder to make ends meet and harder to get ahead and harder to live your dreams when you're working part-time. So you add it all up, it is a formula for economic, if not instability, economic anxiety and a sense that things aren't getting better. We continue to flounder. It's grim. If it was not for everything else going on in the world, Greg, this would be really bad news. But, you know, and it still qualifies as our bad martini, but only basically because we wanted to give Syria a break for a little while.
Exactly, although we're headed there right now on the crazy martini in a way. And the president, of course, is overseas at the G20 summit in St. Petersburg. I'm sure it was a very friendly meeting with Vladimir Putin on Syria and Snowden and all the other issues that they've got to confront each other on. By the way, if you want to read about how Vladimir Putin seems to be outplaying Obama at every turn in recent news cycles, check out the Morning Jolt today. Very well done. But the president gave a press conference today at the end of his appearance at the G20. And in addition to gems like, will you go to war even if Congress says no? And his answer is basically, that's for me to know and you to find out. We found out today that the president is going to give an address to the nation on the evening of September 10th, part of which will be to commemorate, obviously, the anniversary of 9/11. Some say he'll mention Benghazi, but it's also going to be a major push for his use of force resolution in Syria. And, Jim, it seems like the moment for that has passed. The president is back to his belief that one more speech will change everything.
Let me observe that I am glad the president is making this Oval Office address. You may have seen on Politico earlier, some unidentified Obama advisor was saying they thought that Oval Office addresses to the public before launching military action was passé. We just don't do that anymore, Greg. That's like bell bottoms or something. That's really outdated. The hip new thing is to just launch wars and then explain why you're doing it. So as much as I have really growing doubts about the wisdom of taking military action in Syria, this is what a president is supposed to do. And ideally, you do this, you know, as early on in the process as possible to explain to Congress, where the numbers are not looking good in the House by any stretch of the imagination for the president. Say, look, I want to take military action against Syria. Here's how I want to do it. This is the, you know, my objectives. This is how I want to achieve my objectives. This is why it's in our national interest. And this is why not doing this would harm our national interest. Now, I think the president's got a tough case to make there, but I'm glad that he's making it. Now, the fact that he's not, on the one hand, I suppose I understand the need to preserve the potential to let Bashar Assad know that even if Congress votes no, he's not totally off the hook and Obama's not just going to ignore Syria for the remainder of the civil war there. I think President Obama would be getting to really, really intense, constitutionally choppy waters if Congress rejects military action and he does it anyway. And there is no intervening issue. You know, you look back on this, the War Powers Act isn't really that complicated. If we either we've been attacked or Americans are in danger, the president has an enormous amount of latitude for taking that. The problem is that nobody can really make the argument that what's going on in Syria is a danger to Americans. And I think that if somebody could say, you know, look, here's Assad is helping Hezbollah and Hezbollah wants to blow up a U.S. embassy or something like that, you could say, OK, well, there you go. That's, you know, that's a reason for us to strike them. We haven't seen that. The other thing which is fascinating is if we do get involved, if we do start hitting Assad, he probably does decide to effectively declare war on us and then start retaliating. And before you know it, we are involved in a war there. None of this really gets all that addressed all that clearly from anybody in the administration. It's kind of probably the single biggest factor that I hear from readers, and I'm sure you're probably hearing from listeners, is Americans hate Assad, but they really hate the jihadists in the Syrian resistance, that they basically see these guys as the moral equivalent of al-Qaeda, affiliated with al-Qaeda, and effectively indistinguishable from al-Qaeda. So they're asking themselves, why are we trying to help these guys? And Obama's kind of thread the needle to say, well, we're not really trying to help these guys, and John Kerry says they have a bunch of nice guys in the middle of them, and, you know. The case is a mess. So I hope the president can make the best case he can on Tuesday night. My hopes are not high, and my guess is that we will come out of it with a lot of, let me be clear, and a lot of historical comparisons that don't really fit, and a lot of, you know, constant inclinations that the world's credibility is on the line, but not the president's, which I think is exactly the exact opposite. I think the world's credibility is very clear. The world doesn't really care about Bashar Assad using chemical weapons. If they did, they'd be signing up to join our military action. They don't. They're willing to issue a press release over it. This is the raw, hard facts of the world as it is today. And we on the right are wise to look at the world as it really is and not as we want it to be. The problem is we have a president who's totally convinced that the international community exists, the international community cares, and the international community is there to be led on this. When I think there's this grand isolationist apathy that has spread all through Europe and most of our traditional allies in these circumstances.
Jim, as you said, it's good that the president, hopefully all along, was planning to make the case for military action directly to the American people. But given the polls, you wonder if it's in response to the lack of public support. So my question to you, and I don't know if your good friend John Kerry is with you, does that suggest that John Kerry failed to make the case this week?
I think that is probably a safe assessment. Would that it were, John. Would that it were. I think I would say is that, look, I don't think a president can really outsource this to a secretary of state. I don't think they can be outsourced to a vice president or a secretary of defense. I think ultimately the buck stops with the president. And the president himself, and he's done a little bit of his, you know, his Q&A over in Sweden, a couple of his remarks today. But ultimately, convincing the American people to go to war is a job of the commander in chief. And look, when you have a whole bunch of Democrats who don't want to follow their own party's president on this, it makes it very clear that they're not persuaded, that a lot of what Kerry set up on the Hill today did not seem to align with what we had heard in public press accounts and what apparently our intelligence was. There's a devastating op-ed in the Washington Post today from a retired military official who basically says the whole Pentagon is against this, that there is enormous skepticism, that there's enormous wariness, that they don't think this operation is going to do any good whatsoever, and in fact might get us dragged into a quagmire where we don't have a national interest. I mean, it is about as critical as it possibly can. So you're left at, why are we doing this? And if it is just to restore President Obama's credibility, I can just tell you, look now, look, Obama's credibility is gone, and it's not coming back. And so as a result of that, save the Tomahawk missiles and our forces for when we actually have a national interest at stake, instead of engaging in what is basically a big explosive PR exercise. Happy Friday, everybody!
And that's why we saved the good martini for last. And it's not anything politically related. The NFL is back. It was back last night. Peyton Manning, 7 touchdown passes, tying an NFL record. Man, 7 touchdown passes. I don't think the Jets will be lucky to get that by the end of November as a team. But as a Bears and Chargers fan, I don't have much higher hopes either. But it was good to see them back.
It was. NFL is the most popular sport in this country. not to say there aren't lots of other wonderful sports, but it occupies a certain place in Americans' hearts. And I think, you know, you can argue why that is. I think they have a very good way of the timing, the pacing of the season. It begins the fall. I myself am not a huge fan of these Thursday night games. I think actually it's a very bad idea to have, you know, some teams playing on a very short week and things like that. But look, it was great to see the season begin, even though it was delayed a little bit. Kind of just shaking off the hangover from last year's Super Bowl. Halfway through the game, the lights went out, and they had to delay the game for a while.
Right.
It's part of the NFL's new tune-in whenever plan. kickoff is 8-ish, 9-ish sometime. You know, gives you time to go to the bathroom, get your beers, get your snacks, stuff like that. It's good. It is a needed respite in a very gloomy and depressing world these days. If you're a Jet fan like me, it's not that much less gloomy and depressing. But, you know, look, you know, one of the things is, you know, it's a wonderful time of year as of yesterday afternoon when everybody is 0-0 and everybody's got high hopes. And, you know, maybe your hopes are for your team to win the Super Bowl. Or maybe if you're like the Jets fans, you're just hoping that some of your rookie players come along and you're building and you see something to build on this year for greater success in the future. And so it's a wonderful time of year. Hope everyone enjoys it. Hope everyone who prefers college football gets to enjoy their games this weekend. And then hopefully it all gives us something to brighten our spirits as everything else seems to be going to pot around.
Well, I was watching the U.S. Open tennis tournament over the weekend, and I have to say that the NFL coverage, granted, you're not going to get nearly as many weather delays as you would in tennis, but they had stuff ready when the rains came at the U.S. Open. During the blackout at the Super Bowl, remember the Saturday Night Live skit where they pitched two broke girls about 15 times during the 30-minute blackout so they could kill time? Last night, they threw it down to Michelle Tafoya to ask her if it was still raining about six or seven times in the half an hour before they finally kicked off. So a little
worth noting, traditionally, they play football in rain.
Exactly.
What is really complicating this one was the fact, I guess it was a lightning concern, and you don't want anybody to be, you know, getting shocked and being electrocuted or something like that. So that's why they had to delay it. Sounds like lightning wasn't really that bad at the stadium at the time, and, you know, hopefully this doesn't occur again.
So people were ready for the lightning bolts, but the lightning bolts never showed up. I think that's, unfortunately, a pretty good preview of the Chargers season coming up.
Ah, but, very good, very good.
So good luck to the Jets this weekend. I don't know who you guys play, but...
Tampa Bay, Darrell Revis is coming back and wants to catch, like, three interceptions against rookie... Hey, rookie quarterback against Darrell Revis, what's the worst that could happen, hey, Greg?
Yeah, with a guy with a chip on his shoulder against the team, too. So I'm sure I'm sure everything will work out well for you guys. But
there you go.
Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you Monday.
See you on Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.